Hey everybody, welcome back to another awesome episode of the Adventure Options Podcast. This week, I interviewed Brad, who is the president of SeaTurtles.org. It was a very enlightening interview about the problems facing sea turtles and what we can do about it. I'm growing increasingly amazed at how many different areas of life can be both harmed and helped through tourism. But more than that, I just love that I get to talk with some of the world's most fascinating people. As always, this podcast is sponsored by Adventure Writers, copywriting for the travel industry. If you need help rewording your website or writing a new page, go to adventurewriters.agency for help. That's adventure, WRITERS.agency. Now for the show. Brad, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm excited to talk to a fellow Portland metro area. I don't even know what you call us, Portlanders. Well, you're a Portlander. You're in Portland itself, right?
Just outside in Beaverton.
Okay, so you're a Beavertoner.
I don't Beavertonian.
Beavertonian. I don't even know what we call Vancouver people. Vancouverite. I don't know. We're in the metro.
Yes.
That's exciting. And you're on here because you are a co-founder of an organization called Sea Turtles. Your website is seaturtles.org. But I kind of want to start your story before that.
Okay.
Tell me your background as far as getting into conservation and things and tourism and adventure and things like that.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I didn't really grow up, you know, wanting to be in this field and you know, wanting to be a wildlife conservationist or work in the travel industry. It just kind of happened. So I got my degree. I'm from the Pennsylvania, and I got my degree from Penn State. And it was in environmental economics, which was a brand new program at the time. And I realized, you know, when I graduated that I didn't really know anything about what it was like to actually go out and, you know, quote, protect the environment. So I wanted to go and do some hands-on work, volunteering with something related to, you know, that field. And so when I got online, you know, pre-Google, I searched around for volunteer opportunities where you didn't have to be a biologist because I'm not.
Pre-Google?
Yeah.
There was an internet before Google?
Apparently, yes. You know, it didn't function very well, I think. but I wanted to go to Latin America. And so everything that I could find was sea turtle conservation projects in Costa Rica for the most part. And so I said, hey, that sounds like fun. Let me go and work with these animals that I know absolutely nothing about, in a country whose language I don't speak. And so I found an agency that set me up to go and volunteer first for a few weeks with a sea turtle project on the Pacific coast, and then for a few months on an organic farm on the Caribbean coast. And it was one of the best experiences of my life. And, you know, I originally thought it was going to be this, you know, great resume thing and something that I would, you know, kind of have as a memory and then go back to the States and start my career with, you know, some environmental organization. But, you know, the country and these animals really grabbed me in a way that I didn't expect. And so I kept going back to Costa Rica. I went there three times, you know, for 6 month periods. Starting volunteering, I went back a second time to specifically work with sea turtles. And then by the third time I went, I was finally started getting paid and was actually helping to manage a turtle project. And then from there, I moved back to the States and worked for an ecotourism company called EcoTeach, helping to get a nonprofit foundation for them off the ground, which I did for a little while. And then I kind of moved out of the sea turtle world for a few years, working for conservation groups like RARE and Ocean Conservancy, doing fundraising and some ecotourism kind of work.
So if you did not speak Spanish before you went down there, what made you choose Latin America?
It's always a place that had a lot of interest for me, and just in terms of the culture, and the rainforest, and the wildlife. You know, I had been to Europe. I couldn't afford Africa or Asia, to be honest. So I said, "Yeah, let me give Latin America a try." So that's where I focused.
That's very cool. And so then, how does seaturtles.org come about? Is it just Sea Turtles? What's the name of the organization? Sea Turtles?
Yes, Sea Turtles, spelled S-E-E Turtles. Originally, it was an acronym. Hasn't been for quite a while. We spell it that way because, you know, one of our primary goals is to get people to go to places where sea turtles are and participate in their conservation, help the local communities, and have this, you know, amazing experience.
So how does that, how do you start that? How do sea turtles start out of your background?
When I was working for Ocean Conservancy, I was at the time a grant writer, and the organization hired a biologist named Dr. Wallace Jay, as we call him, Nichols. And I had known him from before from some of my sea turtle work. And so when he joined up, we, you know, had a bunch of conversations about what he wanted to do to support sea turtle conservation. And this was an idea that he had. His experience was in Mexico, and primarily Baja, for years, working with fishermen and local communities to protect sea turtles. And a lot of them wanted to work in tourism and stop catching the turtles and eating the turtles, but they didn't really know how to do it or how to bring people there. So his idea was to start this program where we could connect people interested in sea turtles and conservation in the U.S. with these field programs in places like Baja. And I, from my experience, I brought Costa Rica to the table. And the more that we discussed it and fleshed out the idea, it became apparent that I was the ideal person to run the program. And so I moved from the fundraising side into the management side. And I've been, you know, either director or, you know, as of a couple of years ago when we became a fully independent organization, president of the organization.
That's so cool. So what is the biggest problem facing sea turtles? Like, what are the factors that are leading to the decline?
You know, there's a bunch of them. There isn't really one overarching one that we can point to and say this is the biggest problem that sea turtles face. Historically, the two biggest issues that they've had, you know, going back over the long history, over the past couple hundred years of when sea turtles really became a resource to be exploited and when their numbers really started dropping in a major way, was consumption of their meat, their eggs, or of their shells, in the case of primarily the hawksbill sea turtle. Just a quick little background on that. If you've heard of tortoise shell, you know, it's not the cat, you know, but the pattern that comes from the shell of the hawksbill sea turtle. And it was plastic before plastic was invented. It's been used for thousands of years and is really easily malleable and turned into different products. And so it's been valued for that shell for a really long period of time and is now the major reason that that specific species is critically endangered. So that's one big reason. Over the past, you know, 100 or so years, fishing has become a very big issue for sea turtles. They get caught in nets, get caught on hooks. Being air-breathing reptiles, if they can't get to the surface, they can drown. Coastal development, you know, hotels and lighting and things on nesting beaches is a big problem. Two of the emerging kind of big problems for sea turtles that don't really have a great solution at the moment, because unlike, you know, fisheries and poaching, we've been able to manage those problems in a lot of places through hard work and attention. Global warming is a huge issue. You know, the polar bear is kind of the poster species for global warming, but sea turtles are also really affected by it. Rising sea levels are eroding nesting beaches. Warming ocean temperatures encourage coral bleaching, and that's a major turtle habitat. And then something that some people, you know, may have heard about sea turtles is that their eggs, you know, they're not born as, you know, male or female, it's the temperature of the nest. So above about 84 degrees, the hatchings would become female and below male. And there have been some research projects, one recent one in Australia, where they realized that something like 99% of their hatchings were female because of the temperature of the sand.
Wow.
Yes. And then the other big emerging issue that a lot of people have probably heard about, you and others may have seen the video of the turtle with the straw in its nose.
Yes.
That was taken by a friend of mine, Christine Figener, who has become, you know, really the face of the ocean plastic issue and has done an amazing job at getting the awareness out there of how much plastic is in the ocean and what it's doing to sea turtles. You know, we're getting studies now that every single sea turtle that's being found has consumed plastic. They get caught in plastic. They crawl through it on the beaches. They confuse it for jellyfish. So that's a problem that we're just really starting to wrap our heads around.
That is one thing that I heard, and I'm going to butcher this because I can't remember where I was, but I'm sure I was at like some kind of zoo or something with my kids. And the person who was speaking, we were looking at the turtles and they told us some high percentage of turtles that they find have plastic in their bellies. And I just was shocked that many turtles are eating plastic. But yeah, it is. I'm putting the stamp on your statement. Yes. I've heard it twice now. So yes, it is a problem.
Yeah.
I'll be the expert to say, yes, you're thinking through. Those are really big problems. So how in the world do you even put a dent in it?
A lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of, you know, really amazing people working to protect these animals. The sea turtle international community is a really close-knit one and a really dedicated one. And, you know, even though we just, you know, went through all those problems and the situation may seem really bleak, one of the things that I think is a little bit different in the world of sea turtles as compared to a lot of other wildlife is that in a lot of places it's actually getting better. There have been some studies coming out that look at some of the different populations around the world, and a number of them are increasing because, you know, people have been out there on the beaches making sure that people don't eat the eggs and helping the hatchlings get into the water. There's some really inspiring work being done to figure out how to make fishing gear more sea turtle friendly and friendly to other wildlife so that the fishermen are catching just what they want to catch and not the other stuff. I'll give a really quick example of one of the most inspiring wildlife conservation projects that I have ever heard of, a place in Mexico that I got to visit in October that we've been working with and supporting financially for several years called Colola Beach. And this is a black turtle nesting beach, and the black turtle is considered a subspecies of the green turtle, which is considered endangered worldwide. They used to get thousands and thousands of nests on this beach. But consumption of the eggs and the meat of the turtles reduced their numbers to, at one point in the late 90s, they had only 500 nests in an entire season, and turtles nest more than once. So that's only a few hundred turtles. But they had started in the early 80s, researchers from the University of Michoacán and the local indigenous community, the Nahua, started working to protect this beach. And they worked for 20 years before they started seeing any real results. But in the early 2000s, the numbers started going up, like up to 2,000, 5,000, 8,000, 10, all the way up until last year, where they've really started to grow exponentially, and now they're averaging more than 30,000 nests in a season and nearly 2 million hatchlings.
Wow, that's really good growth.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's not quite back to the levels it was before, you know, at its peak, but it has had a tremendous recovery and is a really great example of, you know, what can happen when local communities and researchers and people work together to protect these animals.
That's awesome. So what can, you know, the everyday tourist like me, for example, do with your company? Like, what do you offer?
Sure. There's a number of things. One is we have what we call conservation trips, conservation tours, which we try to distinguish a little bit from, you know, the broader ecotourism, adventure travel kind of field, you know, where we define that as travel that directly supports the protection of endangered wildlife. And so on the trips that we run, you know, we don't run any field programs. That's one thing I didn't get a chance to mention is, you know, we don't, you know, we're not this big NGO who sends people to places to do the work. We find the local organizations who are doing great work, who need some additional support, some volunteer help, some funding, and because they know how to do it a lot better than we do. And there's a whole lot of, as you might imagine, you know, cultural issues of an American coming into a place and telling people what to do. So we find these great local organizations who really need the help, who are at important either nesting beaches or areas where turtles forage, things like that. And we set up these opportunities where people can go and work with these researchers and help, you know, catch the turtles or find them on the beach, and they can participate in the data collection, like measuring the shells and collecting the eggs, moving them to a hatchery, which is a place that on beaches where there's a lot of poaching, where a portion of the beach is set aside and new nests are dug so that are watched 24 hours a day until they hatch, and then the hatchings are released. You know, they stay in the local communities, they benefit the local communities, and they get some of the resources into, you know, the local conservation efforts.
So it sounds like there's a lot of like hands-on things that you can actually do, as far as digging the nests and watching yes. the eggs and stuff like that. That's kind of cool. There's not a, I shouldn't say there's not a lot. I'm sure there's a lot, but it's hard to find trips and tours and stuff like these where you get a lot of hands-on work that everyday layman can do.
It's true. Yeah. And I think, you know, really sea turtles are ideal for this kind of thing. One is, you know, which is especially important for something that calls itself, you know, conservation travel is, you know, you're not bothering them. You're not stressing the animals when you work with them. So when a sea turtle comes up to a beach, one, we know where they are. They're predictable. And they're safe to work with. This is not like darting a tiger or a jaguar. You know, they're not going to bite. If they try, they're really easy to get away from. They go into a trance-like state when they dig the nests. And so you can approach them when they're digging and laying the eggs. And, you know, several studies have shown that there's very little impact on the turtle itself. So you can be there, you know, with a biologist, and, you know, all you need to do is know how to use a tape measure or write something down. You know, it's not complicated work to participate in.
You say that, but I'm pretty sure a turtle almost took my life. I would, really? Let me tell you the story. I was snorkeling in Hawaii, just minding my own business, having a wonderful time looking at the fish, and a turtle swam up underneath me, but came from behind me and swam up. Like, I don't even know how to describe it for people who aren't going to see this, but so I'm up my belly and then in front of my face and passed me that way.
Uh-huh.
And it was so big. It scared me so bad that I screamed and I inhaled seawater and had to, like, I was just had this huge coughing fit at the top, and my sister came over and she's like, "What happened?" I was like, "A turtle." It was, they're huge. And so it just caught me off guard because it swam, yes. You know what I mean? It snuck up from behind. They're sneaky little devils.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I personally haven't been to Hawaii to see them there, which surprises a lot of people. But, you know, I go to places where they're still being eaten or things like that, where they still have a fear of humans. But from every story that I've ever heard about Hawaii is that they're very curious and not afraid of people and will approach in a lot of cases. But I've never heard of anyone almost drowning from the surprise of it.
Well, I don't think I expected to see it. I don't, or maybe if it would have come around and met me head on first or something. But I mean, to the turtles, you know, credit, it didn't touch me. It didn't eat me. It didn't bite me. It just scared me.
Sure. Yeah.
That's really cool though, that you can get that close and feel like you're really doing something to help. So what has this meant for you? Like, you've been working on this for quite some time now. What has this organization meant for you?
You know, I tell people a lot, especially schools, I give presentations for schools and stuff. I think I have the best job in the world. You know, it's got to be, you know, top 1%, because, you know, I get to meet all of these, you know, incredible, inspiring people who are dedicating their lives to protecting these animals and, you know, figure out ways that I can help them. I get to go to places where, you know, these animals are and get to see them on a regular basis. I just had a recent trip to Costa Rica that I took a bunch of people from here from Portland to go and participate with. And so, you know, and when I see the results of this hard work that we're supporting, like in Kalola Beach or in other places, it's really gratifying. You know, I've been doing this for about 10 years now. Last 2018 is actually our 10th anniversary of, you know, when we started this project. And, you know, like the turtles and the nesting beaches and everything, we're finally really starting to see some concrete benefit from the work that we've been doing. You know, we've now generated more than $1 million for turtle conservation and local communities through these trips and programs. We have a program called Billion Baby Turtles, where we raise funds to go to some of these nesting beaches like Kalola and others. And that goes to paying local residents to walk up and down the beach and, you know, keep the poachers and predators away and help the hatchings get into the water. And we've now saved, we're actually approaching 2 million hatchlings at, you know, more than 20 different beaches around the region. So it's really great to, you know, finally see the fruits of your work and to, you know, to get to know the people that you're supporting and know that you're helping them do their jobs.
Why don't you talk about the award that you guys just got nominated for?
Sure. So as of this recording, it's not yet public, but by the time this is...
Through the magic of television. Magic of podcasting.
But yes, we recently find out, since this will go out after this has been made public, we recently found out that we were named as finalists for the Tourism for Tomorrow Award, which is a responsible travel award by the World Travel and Tourism Council. They have a special category this year around what they call change makers, and that's specifically focused on wildlife and protecting wildlife through travel. So that's for the tours that we've done, for the support, for the nesting beaches, and also for a program that we launched in 2016 called Too Rare to Wear, where we are trying to end the demand for the tortoiseshell products that I was mentioning, because they're still frequently sold around the world. And so we've made some progress on that issue as well. So we're one of three finalists, and the award ceremony is in April. And we're really excited to be going and attending and crossing our fingers that we could possibly win this award. For a tiny organization like us, this is a really huge honor.
Well, and it's got to feel good that your efforts are being noticed, which means you're making an impact enough for them to be noticed all around. And then, you know, just the publicity it'll bring back to sea turtles so that you can make even more of a difference. I think that's beautiful. Where are these awards being held?
Spain, Seville, I believe.
You poor thing. Have to go to Spain.
Like I said, I have a terrible job.
I'm starting to believe you. You might possibly have the best job in the world. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, Brad, it has been so fun just hearing about the organization and the things you're doing and how people can help out and the things that, you know, just us everyday people can get involved with. I like to end these interviews with two questions. Mm-hmm. And the first one is, where's your favorite place to go? And you can even specify, you know, where's your favorite turtle beach to go if you want. And then your piece of advice for today's traveler could be anything.
Sure. So in terms of my favorite place to go, you know, a place that's really close to my heart is a place in Costa Rica, where I spent a lot of time when I was working in ecotourism and with sea turtles. It's the southern Caribbean coast of Costa Rica. So if you're familiar with the Puerto Viejo, Cahuita area, I spent quite a bit of time in the close to 2 years that I was going back and forth to Costa Rica there. And there's just so many amazing parts of that area. The Gandoca Manzanillo Wildlife Refuge has one of the most beautiful stretches of coastline and incredible hike through there to these incredible tiny little beaches and these beautiful overlooks. And it ends at this organic farm that I mentioned earlier, Punta Mona, that I spent a lot of time, that is a really, truly amazing place. And then the beach right after that is one of the first turtle nesting beaches, a leatherback turtle nesting beach that I spend a lot of time on and is a really important place to me personally. The area just has incredible culture, Afro-Caribbean culture, indigenous culture, the Costa Rican culture, incredible mix of people, beautiful ocean landscapes, and just an extraordinary place. And then in terms of advice for travelers, you know, when I get asked this question, what I say more than anything is, you know, put a little bit of thought into the places where you're going and how you can leave them better than when you got there. And I just don't mean for sea turtles, although that's a big part of it. So you can learn how to recognize tortoiseshell jewelry and make sure you avoid it. And what we say is don't shop at anywhere that sells these products at all. And you can find out more about that, quick little plug, on our website, toorare2wear.org. But, you know, the cultural aspects of it, what you should wear, how you should act, staying in places that are locally owned restaurants, avoid the big, you know, chain resorts, things like that, and just leave as much as your money in the places and interact with the people there and the wildlife and nature as much as possible. And that'll benefit both the people and the nature and just create this extraordinary memory, you know, for yourself.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on, Brad.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Shayna here. Join the Too Rare to Wear movement with me, and let's make sure turtles are around for a long time. Until next time, after a while, crocodile.